This is the Cambridge Marketing Podcast, delving into the world of digital identity.
You as an entrepreneur or as a content creator would have the ability to own the entire brand equity of your online address.
Welcome to the Cambridge Marketing Podcast, available on YouTube, Apple and Google Podcasts, and your smart speaker too.
Hello and welcome. This week we are in the world of digital identity and I am joined by Lisa Box, Senior Vice President of Business Development at Identity Digital, and Rachel Sterling, who's the Chief Marketing Officer at Identity Digital. Welcome both. Lisa, could we start with what the digital identity industry actually is and what it encompasses?
Sure, and thank you for having us on the show. We're excited to be here. Digital identities are how people, places, and things on the internet. So businesses, you might have a property, anything, have a domain name. And that is actually masking an IP address. And that's what connects things to the internet through the domain name system. A lot of times it's called the DNS system. And that system is how sort of the internet all connects together. And what we're finding and what has been around for a long time is that now no longer just consumer-based businesses or large corporations want a really great domain name. Everyone is really looking for that identity online. They're wanting it for their pets. They're wanting it for their homes. They're wanting it for themselves. They're wanting it for their TikTok shop. They're wanting it for whatever might be. And those identities, those domain names, is really what Identity Digital is all about. We're one of the largest TLD operators, or top-level domain operators, in the world. We have just under 270 different domain extensions that we operate, such as .fitness or .bio or .land. And we've been around for many, many years. It was grown through a series of acquisitions, and we've rebranded into Identity Digital. Rachel, I'll turn it over to you if there's more you'd like to add.
For me, and by the way, thank you for having me here. This is great. One of the fun challenges of working with domains, superficially, you'd be like, domains, is that really interesting? But then when you start to scratch the surface of all the creativity that lives behind all of our top-level domains, you realize that you can unearth so many different stories, so many different use cases. We have everything from generic top-level domains, like a pro, a .pro. If you are offering professional services, you could create that website or that domain for yourself to designate that you are a professional. But then we also have super fun ones, like we have .WTF. And I'm sure this is a family show, so I won't tell you what .WTF means, but that's really fun. And that unlocks so many different stories and so many different ways as a marketer I can connect with customers to get them excited about domains.
And I suppose it very much indicates if I'm dealing with someone who's got a .pro, I'm going to expect a certain, it's going to set up some expectations. Whereas if it's a .WTF, then I'm probably fairly certain that it's not going to be terribly serious. Yeah.
I would beg to differ. You never know.
Yeah. And I think that that's a really key point, is we call them descriptive domains for a reason. It used to be, when domains first came out, we were very limited on the right side of the dot, right? .com, .net, .org. Those were the ones that were utilized. .gov is for government. .edu is for education. But there were very few. And then the governing body of the DNS system, called ICANN, allowed new applications to form for new TLDs. It was quite exciting in the domain name space, because it was something that we were looking for years and years and years, is that more creativity. How can we get the right side of the dot in line with the brand? And so when you speak about understanding and having expectations of what you're going to be visiting, you know a dot attorney is an attorney. Dot properties is going to have something probably to do with real estate. You're going to have that intent. And that way, it's not just one for everything. It's really got the intent on both sides of the dot. And I think that's really important, because as we see the expansion of how people are using the DNS system and how people are using the internet, you're going to have to find more creative ways to really stand out. And this is one of those ways.
So do you think from a branding perspective, if you don't have one of these more interesting, more exciting levels, that perhaps you're going to look a bit old-fashioned?
Well, I live here in San Francisco, and so in the heart of Silicon Valley. And the conversations that I have amongst parents at the pitch, at the soccer pitch, or the football pitch, if you will, are very different than probably the conversations that folks have in other parts of the world. And a lot of times as we sit there talking, we talk about investing in startups and new technology that's developing in this area. And when I took this job nearly 2 years ago, what I heard from folks is that startup founders were being advised to pick descriptive domains because picking a new extension provided them with a branding element that connotated them as being tech forward, modern. And so we saw this with the adoption of a lot of the .IOs and .AI companies. And so by picking those domains, you are indicating to anybody who visits your site, I am on the forefront, I am on the cutting edge of technology. And so we're seeing that more and more and more. One of the use cases that's really we've seen explode over the last year is content creators who are very keen to aggregate all of their online websites into one designation. And we've already seen this in the vernacular where people say, oh, they're on Instagram or they're on TikTok. And they'll say, oh, check out my link in bio. And within that link in bio, they have their website, which has all of their information. But now what we're seeing people do is we're seeing people use the domain extension .bio. And so you can now get your name. So I own rachelsterling.bio. It's still available. I'm able to grab it and it's personally branded for me. And that use case is this is where I'm going to house all of my content.
And another use case that is for personal branding is that people who are business professionals like myself, who make a lot of meetings, do a lot of work on LinkedIn, I was always struggling with having to send these long links of like, here's my Calendly, you know, calendar. And it was this hard to say link and all that. But now I just say, go to lisabox.contact and schedule some time with me. Because we don't have business cards anymore. We're virtual, right? And or I say, go to lisabox.bio if you want to find out more about me. And that redirects to my LinkedIn. And these use cases are becoming more and more effective. And in fact, Rachel's team wonderfully did some research that showed 94% of those types of users of these types of platforms wanted their own personalized custom domain to show their brand, whether it was for their vacation rental properties or whether it was their Roblox handle or whether it was for LinkedIn. It didn't matter. They all wanted their own destination on the internet that showed their own brand. And I thought that was pretty powerful.
It's interesting. I mean, I have kjkapoor.com because it wouldn't have occurred to me to go for kirankapoor.bio. Presumably you end up with kirankapoor1752.bio. Yeah, that's going to be, and that's how things are going to change. So I'm really intrigued by your football discussions or your soccer discussions. So entrepreneurs and startups are looking for much more interesting extensions because it makes life easier and it's easier to make them stand out. Is that fair?
That's correct. And it's also about availability. And so when you start thinking about naming your company, we were doing research to prepare for this call. And what we learned was that back when people first started registering domain names in the 1980s, there may have been 20,000 in use. And now there, at least I think it's like more than 350 million domains in use. Wow. And so the chances that your name for your business is available as a .com Mm-hmm. probably slim to none. And so what people start to do is they start adding words on either side. And what that does as a marketer is it dilutes the equity of your brand name. What was the point in building that brand name if you can't actually own the address for that brand name online? Mm-hmm. And so what we want to do is we want to make people realize that there's value on that right side of the dot, and you can incorporate that into your online brand identity. And so by opening it up to exploring all of the different web addresses that are available, you as an entrepreneur or as a content creator or any use case that you might have would have the ability to own the entire brand equity of your online address.
So can you give me some examples of, I mean, we've had WTF and we've had .pro. What other sort of extensions can people have?
What we've realized as an organization that recognizes that we need to actively market the value of new web addresses to our customers is that when we indicate a message around, there's so many to choose from, people suffer from analysis paralysis. They're like, well, I couldn't possibly choose, so I'm just going to go with a .com. Mm-hmm. And so what we've done over the last 18 months is we've pivoted to really identify top-level domains and establish use cases for them to make people feel confident that this is the right one for them. And so for Women's History Month, what we've done is we are running a campaign right now in support of .life. And what we've seen is that there's a use case around bloggers, particularly women who blog, about creating whether it's aspirational experiences, travel experiences, beauty experiences. There's equity in leaning into a .life. And so we've been running a campaign across, it's a full funnel campaign. We even partnered with Reductress, which is an irreverent online magazine publication, to generate what we're calling a mansplainer tool, where women can go into the mansplainer tool, it's mansplain.life, and enter like times that men have mansplained to them, and it'll auto-generate a response so that you don't have to come up with it. And just really tapping into just control that women can have in owning their own brand through this .life domain.
Lisa, you wanted to come in.
Well, I think we have an amazing portfolio of domain names, but a lot of times, you know, as Rachel said, people can get spun up because there's a lot of very descriptive ones, but we also have a lot of very ones that are generic. Place, land, world. These could be anything that someone would want, style. We have so many wonderful domain names, and you'll start to see trends. One of the biggest trends is with .movie. That was adopted by several, one specific very large movie studio. They brand all of their movies with .movie. But for someone like a .life or a .land, I'd much rather have Lisa's Land than lisasland.com. Like, that doesn't do it for me as much as Lisa's Land does. And I could go around saying, hey, visit my site, Lisa's Land. So I think once people understand what a DNS is, that you can have this creativity with the domain name system. You can have it, and it won't hurt the operability of it. It does not hurt your SEO. It does not do any of those things. And it is very much more descriptive for you. That will be, you know, when we see the explosive growth. And we're already starting to see that in our business. So that's my two cents.
If I may offer an example of one that's live right now, which I think would be really helpful, Vogue magazine. They do a lot of in-person events, fashion shows, activities. And so Vogue uses Vogue.world. And what that website is it's an aggregation of all of their live events. And so if you go to Vogue.world right now, it's everything you need to know about being in Paris for Fashion Week. And so it's just an awesome way to put the user or the viewer of the content in the mindset of you are entering Vogue's world, and we are just going to own that branding end to end.
Yes. And again, you can see how that would, as a user, I see Vogue.world, I've got some idea of where I'm going and what I'm doing. So what are the sort of the challenges you find with selling digital identity?
There are unique challenges to selling domains that people are not familiar with. And so I always like to have empathy for the person on the other end of the purchase. If you are buying a domain, what that means is that you have a dream. And I don't mean to say that to be dramatic, but you've had an idea and you believe that your idea is worth putting in the sweat equity to build that idea. That includes building a website. It includes marketing a business, finding customers. And so I have deep empathy for the person who is on the decision maker for buying a domain. And so when you think about that customer journey, they have to feel confident and comfortable that the name that they are picking for their website is an accurate representation of who they are as a person and who they want their business to be. And so often you have to get over that hump of fear that they're going to pick the wrong one. And so for me, one of the biggest challenges we have as marketers is really building confidence that you can choose a descriptive domain and it will help improve your outlook as a business from a branding standpoint, from a memorability standpoint, and from a discovery standpoint. This will not be a bad choice. This will be a good choice for you. And so that's a big challenge. The other big challenge that we face is really establishing mental models or use cases of when you would use one of these domains. And so here's an interesting evolution of .bio. The .bio top-level domain was originally created for organics and health food products. It makes sense when you say that, right? I'm like, oh, sure, great, biodegradable garbage bags. I'm going to go buy a .bio for that, right? But then when we realized that there was this use case of people pointing at content in their bios on social media, we realized that there was a whole other designation for what this could be. And so then the challenge became, okay, we see this use case. How do we ensure that we're getting this message to market in a meaningful way? And what we did is we worked with influencers. We did social campaigns. We did full funnel marketing campaigns. We did partnerships with sites that content creators use, like beacons. And so it was really about understanding the use case, packaging it up in a meaningful way for our target audience, and then finding the right go-to-market and partnerships and media channels in which we could amplify that message. And so that was a really interesting challenge. And as Lisa mentioned, we have 270 TLDs in our portfolio. So how do we do that for each one? Where when you are going into your registrar of choice, the place where you would buy your domain, you're able to say, unequivocally, without any fear or confusion, this is the domain for me. This accurately represents who I am. It accurately represents my business.
So that's quite interesting. So from a customer journey point of view, you're trying to catch people before they do the classic where you go into GoDaddy or whatever and choose your domain name. You've actually got to catch them before that stage so they've made that decision. So that's quite interesting because you then got to catch them at a sort of pre-buying level.
We have to catch them when they're laying in bed at night, staring up at the ceiling, going, do I have the guts to do this? Yeah. That's our moment of impact right there. And then once they start doing that search where they have this inspiration, they've come up with this brand name or brand identity, we have to be there with the right domain name and the right domain extension that activates that dream.
So that's a really interesting challenge. So Lisa, has this always been a challenge within this industry? I mean, how do you know how to capture people?
I would say when domains first started coming out, there was a very small group of really smart speculators that understood where the internet was going, and they understood the value of this real estate. That's what they used to call it, is internet real estate. And they would say they would use name generators, domain name generators, as they're called spinners today, to come up with as many vocabulary combination words and register them in bulk. And then they would hold them and sell them on what's called the aftermarket. And so when people then started recognizing, oh, I need a website, they would have to buy these extraordinary expensive domain names from these speculators. With the advent of the new TLDs, that isn't the primary use for these TLDs. These TLDs use cases are really those people, as Rachel was saying, that had a dream. They have a dream that they need to go seek that out. And so before, when there was a very few info, org, net, com availability, you didn't have to explain to them that the brand on both sides of the dot was something that they really needed to be paying attention to. And that's why more of the bricks and mortar companies have a .com, because that was for commercial use, right? And they would just go register their domain name, and then that would be that. But what we're seeing now is people who have this dream, because it's now much easier for someone to start an online business that has monetization opportunities or gives them a voice or lets them say what they want to say, because there's so much more ease of use to engage with the internet, people are now realizing, I can do this. I can get a DNS connector with my identity. I can get my own domain name and start my own journey online. And I think that the hardest part about that is, one, letting them understand that we can help them with their dream. And two is when you actually have to set up and connect the DNS. And so, you know, using a company or a registrar that makes that easy, or a freelancer or an agency or whomever you go to make that happen, making that as easy as possible. Because everyone wants it, but they're scared of it, and they shouldn't be. It's, you know, it can be done. So I think that those are sort of the two sides to that quarter.
We've done a ton of research to identify who our target audience is. It can't just be anybody with a dream who wants to start a business, because we would dilute our marketing spend. And, you know, when you try to target everyone, you actually reach no one. I think most listeners on your podcast would probably agree with that statement. For us, where we've landed is we've landed on recognizing that there's value in reaching two distinct personas. So number one are creative entrepreneurs. Internally, we refer to them as our Maverick Mayas. And these are folks who have an idea for a business. They like to see themselves on the forefront. They are leading adopters of new technology, and they are willing to show off that decision. And so they want to be seen on the forefront. So that would be number one. Our second target audience, we call these are our tech bros. Our internal name for them are Genius Jacksons. And they're guys, and they work in technology, and they recognize, it's that adage that I mentioned before about startup founders. They recognize that picking a new descriptive domain, a new web address, is crucial for them on their journey of positioning themselves as on the forefront of technology. And so when you start to realize that our target audiences are both leading adopters, they both view themselves as creative or technologically proficient or on the cutting edge, it starts to really crystallize how you're going to reach those people through what mediums and what sort of messaging you're going to deliver to them.
And I love I love your descriptive names. Sorry, Lisa, you wanted to come in.
Oh, I was going to say, from a strategic partnerships perspective, the what we're looking at is all of those people or the things they want to have an address for, or the moments in time. We're looking at, we work with the platforms that bring those things to them. And so that way that they can provide those identities. So that's sort of the difference between a sort of direct to consumer or a B2B persona for your listeners.
Okay. That, yes. And again, that's really interesting, because that's another sort of segmentation of how you're looking at your marketplace. That this has been really, really interesting. So I also wanted to talk to you a little bit about your marketing careers and how you've ended up where you are. So Lisa, could I start with you? Because I think you've worked in this industry for a while. How did you come into it?
Wow. I have worked in a few industries. So I was I was actually at a startup in Austin. I originally at a startup called Trilogy. And for people who don't know who that is, you can Google the Trilogy Mafia. It's kind of interesting. But I went to a real estate startup, and we were working with all the major real estate companies. And then I had a family event happened where I really needed to move and take care of a family member. And it was a hard decision for me. I had been at this company for a very long time. I was on track to be in the C-suite. And I gave up that startup to go take care of my family member. And a friend of mine was like, well, come work with us. We're doing this domain name thing, and it's really interesting. And I was like, okay, I will. And I entered in the domain name industry, and that was early 2000s, well, mid-2000s. And from there, I started really understanding the mechanics of the internet and the infrastructure behind it. And so from working in the domain name industry, I went into large hosting companies, and then I ended up at a WordPress platform called WP Engine. And during this time, I, you know, toggled between sales, marketing, and business development, running those teams, and really fell in love with partnerships, corp dev, biz dev at WP Engine. I stayed there for almost 7 years. And then I was taking a professional pause, as my friend coined it, and I had just gotten back from St. John. I took a few months off, and a mutual friend said, you know, hey, Akram, our CEO, who I knew, called me. He's looking for someone to run strategic partnerships. And I was like, oh, no, I'm not going back into domains. They're not pulling me back in. But it's one of those industries that's so fun to work in and so wonderful because of the creativity it spawns, plus the technology, which I'm a closet tech geek, that I really love that. And I think part of the reason I became successful in business development and sales leadership's roles is I always had a very strong mentorship network around me. I knew when people were in the right seat at the right time to help me. And I had, you know, strong leadership. And that's what leaders have to do, is they have to show that strength and help people along when empowering them. And the best quote I think anyone's ever given me was just, leave her alone and let her do her thing and she'll do whatever you need done. And so, you know, that takes a lot of trust and a lot of belief from your leaders. And you know, that's you know, really what's been able to spawn my success is because I was empowered to do so. So that's my story and I'm sticking to it.
That's brilliant. And it's a lovely example of how careers don't necessarily go in a straight line, which, and we talk about squiggly careers a lot now. And I think that's really important.
Yeah, the successful ones. I mean, I've taken step back positions to move forward. I've gone right and left. I mean, sometimes you just can't be afraid to take the thing that's scary, because sometimes that will catapult your career in a different direction that you never even expected it.
That's lovely. And Rachel, how about you? How did you end up where you are?
I've also taken a winding road. I started my career working in TV production at various studios and networks around New York City. And then I followed a boy to the great state of Michigan. And my now husband was getting his MBA at the University of Michigan. And it was very fortuitous that Google had just opened their first office in Ann Arbor, Michigan. And I was able to get in on the ground floor at Google very early on. And I ended up spending 11 years there working on sales teams, then marketing teams, learning the craft of product marketing and outbound go-to-market. And I got to work on the YouTube brand, and then I spent several years working on the Nest brand, which was transformative. That was such a beloved brand. From there, I got to move all over the United States, which was wonderful. Google was very generous with picking me and my family up and moving us around when the opportunity struck, and ended up here in the San Francisco Bay Area, where following Google, I ended up working at Twitter, pre-Elon Twitter, for about 3 years, where I was the head of product marketing. And then following that, I ended up at Instagram, where I was also the head of product marketing. And then I also got a phone call from our CEO, Akram, who I had not known. And he said, do you want to come work with us to sell domains? And I looked at the opportunity, and you know, it was so outside of the box of what I had considered. And I was like, yeah, let's do this. This is going to be really fun. And then I've been here, like I said, about a year and a half, and I get to work with wonderful people like Lisa. And to me, what's been really wonderful about this job is we're a small company, which means we can just get stuff done. There's not a lot of red tape. You have an idea, we can run with it, which has just been glorious after working at very large companies for the last 15, 16 years. And so that's wonderful. The other thing is that there's no shortage of opportunity. And so when I arrived here, we were largely a B2C organization where we were trying to bring our portfolio, our domain portfolio, to market. And Lisa and I very early on realized that we were missing one whole side of the funnel. And so we spun up an entire B2B side of the house. Everything from narratives to sales enablement to event marketing to pitch decks. We just launched our partner portal, which allows all of our partners to be able to pull down case studies and logos and really become active partners with us when we want to go to market through another entity that's not one of the ones that we own. And so this has just been a career highlight for me. And, you know, people would look at my experience and they'd be like, oh, but you worked at these big companies. And I'm like, yeah, that was great. But like working at a place like Identity Digital has really been magical.
And I think for your users, the journey that Rachel and I have taken the company on, which was, you know, when you have this many products, you need to either focus on one or two of the products and really take them to market, or you need to focus on a channel strategy where others can do the same. That's B2B. And when you have a channel strategy, you need to encompass things like account-based marketing to get the senior level executives to listen to what you're saying. And you have to be really careful about what you're saying, because that content will make the decision whether or not they do business with you. It won't be the discussions that they have with your sales team or your business development team. And for your users, Gartner has done a lot of research on this, of how content in B2B marketing, especially when you're marketing to any type of technology executive, which in today's world, channel is technology. Every company is a technology company now. There isn't like a tech space. And so when you're thinking about doing a go-to-market activation or you're planning your go-to-market, really think through that B2B funnel. And this is, I think, where Rachel's superpower is that describing the performance-based marketing in a B2B funnel is not easy. And with her knowledge of how that comes through, she has been able to really articulate how the funnel maps, then I can match that to how the partner funnel works. And I think that that's what's made a big difference, is not just articulating it, but the execution of that has been really interesting. We've gotten more done in less than a year than I've seen most companies do in, you know, 2 to 3. So it's been really great.
Thank you both. That's been an absolutely fascinating oversight into a world that I suspect the listeners, certainly I, didn't know anything about at all. And it's been lovely also to hear about sort of squiggly careers and the fact that you can you can follow a boy, you can have a caring break, and still your career can progress. Because I think we all sometimes worry that life's going to get in the way of the career, but actually life is part of your career. Thank you both very much indeed for your time. I know your day is just starting out in the States, and you look like you've got much nicer weather than I have. So Rachel Sterling and Lisa Box, thank you so much for your time.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you so much. This was great.
This is the Cambridge Marketing Podcast.